Mr. Speaker, sir, I'm answering in my capacity as Minister in charge of Social Services Integration. May I have your permission, sir, to answer questions 3 to 25 in today's order paper together?
Yes, you may.
Sir, my reply will also cover related questions filed by members for subsequent sittings. Members who had filed those questions may wish to withdraw their questions after this session. Thereafter, Minister of State for Home Affairs, Goh Pei Ming, will, with your permission, sir, address questions number 26 and 27 in today's order paper.
All right, so for all members who have filed questions, we will take supplementary questions after MOS Goh Pei Ming has addressed PQs 26 and 27.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Sir, this House would be familiar with the tragic case of Megan Kong. She died in February 2020 after months of abuse by her mother and her mother's boyfriend. All the agencies concerned, the MSF Child Protective Service, the Early Childhood Development Authority, or Agency, EGDA, the Singapore Police Force, Beyond Social Services, and HART at Fei Yue Child Protection Specialist Centre, accept the panel's findings in full. There were opportunities to pick up on the abuse which might have prevented Megan's death. Our responses clearly fell short. As Minister Masagos and I had said on the 23rd of October, MSF is the lead for the national child protection ecosystem. On behalf of all the agencies and organizations concerned, we are deeply sorry for the outcome and for the lapses at the Child Protective Service and the Singapore Police Force, as well as the missed opportunities at EGDA. We should have done much better. Mr. Speaker, our social workers confront the pain of child abuse cases every day. Their emotional burden of separating parents and children and managing cases resulting in tragic outcomes is a heavy one, which they have chosen to bear. To our social workers, thank you for your commitment to protecting vulnerable children. Let us carry this burden together as a sector and as a society. Before I answer members' questions, I would like to set out how the child protection system works. And might I add, it is quite similar for vulnerable adults as well. For child protection, it rests on the foundational principle that parents are primarily responsible for their children. And in most families, parents do their best for their children. We do not and should not intervene unnecessarily. Families encountering the child protection system often find the experience stressful. They may be questioned by teachers, healthcare professionals, social workers, and the police, which can feel intrusive and accusatory, especially if eventually no abuse is found. Social workers aim for a collaborative relationship with the families that they work with. They support parents to care for their children, intervening only when the child is at risk. When there are reasonable grounds to believe that a child is in need of care and protection, the law empowers child protection officers to step in, to implement safety plans, or even remove the child from the home and from the family. Protecting children requires society's collective effort. We depend on neighbours, friends, relatives to offer help to parents facing caregiver stress and to report suspected abuse by calling NAVH, or the National Anti-Violence and Sexual Harassment Hotline. Alongside them, preschools, schools, hospitals, healthcare institutions, and social service agencies also play critical roles in identifying abuse. Over the years, MSF and our partners have worked to strengthen the child protection ecosystem. Megan's death 5 years ago had already prompted further enhancements to protocols. The system has evolved since then, but there is still much more that can be done. My response to members' questions will be in three parts. First, enhancing frontline capability. Second, strengthening systems and oversight. And third, responding to the review panel's recommendations. Mr. Speaker, let me start with frontline capability. We will enhance frontline capability and empower professionals who are our first line of defense. In particular, we will continue to manage practitioner workload and ensure social workers are adequately resourced. The risk of burnout is real, and it is difficult to attract and retain people in child protection work. Over the past 3 years, the average caseload ratio for the sector has been fairly stable, at around 18 to 21 cases per worker. But the variation across centres is significant, ranging from 12 to 30 cases per worker. For the Child Protective Service, now known as PSV, or Protective Service, we have doubled our child protection officers from around 45 in 2019 to more than 90 in 2040, and we are continuing to expand. The additional resources have helped bring down the average caseload per officer, down from around 40 to 35 today. We have also redesigned the job to reduce the workload on our protection officers. Support staff were brought in and services were outsourced to handle ancillary tasks and augment resourcing for critical work. This enables our protection officers to focus on social investigations as well as supervision. We will continue to step up training and competency development to give our practitioners the skill and the confidence to detect child abuse and make sound decisions that keep children safe. Now, some members raised concerns about early and accurate identification of child abuse and the liability issues that may arise when making a report. There are already laws mandating reporting of child abuse. For example, the Early Childhood Development Centre's regulations require preschools to report suspected child abuse, and failure to do so is an offence. Section 424 of the Criminal Procedure Code also mandates the reporting of certain serious offences, such as grievous hurt and sexual offences, and this includes offences against children. If professionals and members of the public report child abuse in good faith, the CYPA, or Children and Young Persons Act, protects them from civil or criminal liability. That said, professionals may find themselves in a difficult position to report abuse, not only for legal reasons, but for fear of having the families cut them off, resulting in them not having sight of the vulnerable person. They may also be concerned about undermining the trust that they have painstakingly built up with the families that has enabled them to keep the child safe. MSF will therefore look into how we can better foster a safe environment for professionals to report suspected child abuse cases. To better identify child abuse, we are also studying analytic tools to help us connect the dots and see trends across agencies. This allows us to target our efforts on higher risk cases. But having said that, we have to carefully validate these tools to avoid excessive false positives, which could overwhelm the system, and to avoid reinforcing stereotypes. Some members asked us about intervention thresholds and highlighted the need for balanced decision making. Determining when and how to intervene requires difficult judgment calls, balancing child safety with preservation of the family. Members' questions reflect a range of views. Some members advocate for earlier intervention or child removal, while others caution against overreach, which may cause distress to otherwise reasonably well-functioning families. The approach to child protection occurs on a continuum. When concerns arise, the community can offer informal support. A neighbour can check in, family members can ask if help is needed, lend a listening ear, and so on. But as concerns escalate, the child protection system progressively steps in. From social workers educating parents on child management strategies and caregiver stress responses, to state intervention in serious cases of child abuse. Generally, the existing thresholds are appropriate. However, we will make clear that while we respect the role of parents in disciplining their children, excessive physical discipline will be considered and reported as abuse. I would also like to address a concern about reporting thresholds. Members can be assured that the role of those making a report is simply to flag concerns. It is the job of our social workers to support parents who may be struggling with caregiving, and the job of the police and child protection specialists to ascertain if abuse has occurred. The second set of issues raised by members touch on how we will strengthen our systems and our oversight. One area is to regularly audit agencies managing child abuse cases, including the Protective Service, so as to ensure accountability and transparency and to foster continuous improvement. The Protective Service has been working with child protection case management agencies to surface cases where they assess that the risk level exceeds what the agencies were designed to handle. We have also started to contact other social service agencies and organizations that are not child protection case management agencies to surface all suspected child abuse cases. This will be done progressively and expeditiously. Today, the Protective Service conducts periodic practice reviews with external consultants to assess whether officers have made accurate case assessments and complied with protocols. We intend to further strengthen our quality assurance framework by increasing the frequency of practice reviews and expanding the audit scope. MSF will implement the enhanced measures by 2026. Several members suggested having more centralized coordination and data integration. Indeed, MSF will be setting up a new social service coordination center, supported by technology. It will help us better detect, sense make, and connect the dots for cases from different touch points, such as the social services, education, preschool, community, and other sectors. We are also working to improve protocols and coordination with the police for missing children, something mentioned by Mr. Victor Lai. Today, child protection case management agencies have to lodge a police report within 24 hours and concurrently alert the Protective Service, or PSV. The Protective Service also reports cases to the police within 24 hours. When a case of suspected child abuse is reported to the police will assess the case based on the facts and circumstances. For cases assessed as higher risk, for example, involving serious physical harm or sexual abuse, the police will immediately intervene to ensure the child's safety. The Protective Service will keep a close watch on missing children reports made to the police by case agencies and work closely with the police. When the police come across a case of suspected child abuse, besides conducting police investigations, they will also inform MSF for safety planning and social intervention. The new Social Service Coordination Centre, which I mentioned earlier, will also provide tighter links to police operations. Finally, let me address questions from members on the government's response to the panel's recommendations. MSF fully accepts the panel's recommendations. They focus on three broad areas. First, improving the clarity of roles within the child protection ecosystem. Second, fostering a stronger learning culture. And third, providing more structured support for social service practitioners. We will consult and work closely with the social sector to implement the recommendations progressively and complete the implementation by end 2026. Sir, some of our responses to the panel's recommendations have already been set out earlier in my reply. For example, the establishment of the Social Service Coordination Centre, the use of analytic tools and technology to track cases and connect the dots, and working with agencies which are not child protection case management agencies to surface cases to child protection management agencies so that we can handle them. I will briefly set out our responses to the other recommendations for completeness, and since members have asked. In recommendation two, the panel proposed establishing an appeals mechanism to address cases where agencies have differing views on risk levels and case management. This has to be done quite quickly. So MSF will set up a triage assessment panel by the first quarter of 2026 to do this and to determine which agency is best placed to manage the case and then move. In recommendation 3, the panel proposed that MSF should review EGDA's role in triaging potential intrafamilial child protection cases. We agree. By early next year, preschools will report such cases directly to the NAVH. In recommendation 4, panel recommended that we correct the wrong perception that only family members can make a police report of a missing child and to create a safe culture of reporting. Since 2020, MSF has put in place formal protocols for cases where a child is unsighted or missing. There is now a common understanding within the sector that anyone can make a police report of a missing child. But we will continue raising public awareness and understanding of this issue, such as through the Break the Silence campaign. In recommendation 5, the panel proposed that lessons learned from critical incidents should be routinely shared with community agencies. In the past, MSF would carry out bilateral reviews of incidents with the relevant social service agencies. In future, all deaths of children known to social services will be independently reviewed with lessons shared across the sector. We will consult with the sector on how best to do this. On the final recommendation about providing more structured support for social service practitioners, I would like to assure members that MSF is taking steps to bolster the morale of our protection officers and the social services sector. As recommended by the panel, employers can do more to create a safe and supportive work environment for protection practitioners. To enable this, MSF will set up a Protection Practitioners Care Fund to implement capability building and well-being initiatives for protection practitioners. Further details will be announced next year. Sir, let me conclude. MSF will continue to engage and work closely with stakeholders to strengthen our internal systems and communication across agencies. We must carefully calibrate our efforts, even as we do more. Protocols and structured tools are important, but they should guide and not replace critical thinking, judgment, and relationship building. We must never reduce child protection work or vulnerable protection work to a mere checkbox system. Instead, we need to build trust and relationships over and on top existing systems and procedures between parents, the community, social services, and the government. As individuals and as a society, let us look out for those who may be struggling. Parents and caregivers who need support in parenting and child giving and child caregiving. Turn to our community and social service agencies for help and guidance. Each time a tragedy like Megan's occurs, we feel anger, sorrow, and regret. Whether we are members of society or social work professionals, we must work together and do our utmost to protect our children. Let us rededicate ourselves to protecting every child and vulnerable person, never forgetting those whom we have lost.